Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, welcome back to another PT Pearl. So today we're going to be diving in a little bit on hip shifts, rotated pelvises, leg length discrepancies. These are things that a lot of people will hear walking out of an office. Oh, I have a leg length discrepancy, and it's just this new shocking thing in your life. So we're going to dive in a little bit on that, kind of how these things are tested in the clinic and how we think we actually might be able to approach these a little more optimally.
So let's talk about the differences that people hear. I mean, you kind of touch on it. One hip higher than the other.
Yeah.
I have a rotated pelvis. Well, definitely leg length discrepancy.
You might be told things about your sacrum. Yeah. You might be hear a twisted pelvis or, yes. You know, hip shift, you know, so many different ways in which people are upslip. Oh, I have an upslip on one side of my, or a downslip on one side of my pelvis, which again are things that practitioners for a long time have been doing these tests in the clinic. And telling people, oh, it looks like you have this discrepancy, and then they'll do something to fix it and then send people on out. And that's kind of the process that we're going to talk into a little bit as to how people test and convince people in their minds that there's some sort of discrepancy in their legs.
I did look at one of the studies that said that if we actually look at the radiograph, I can't remember how many people they actually tested, but we'll link the research. 90% of people came back with some sort of leg length discrepancy, like an actual radiograph of this. They came back with, and because when we go and we look through life, things happen. Traumas happen, accidents happen, overuse happens. Like there's different things, and it can cause some shortening of literal bone in terms of how you're growing and how you're forming.
Yeah. And when we talk about leg length discrepancies, what Jen's talking about is a true leg length discrepancy, like from the radiograph, they measured the bones and there is a slight marginal discrepancy. But again, that can be because of so many things throughout life. And so then the other thing is a perceived?
Yeah.
Perceived leg length discrepancy, which is, again, doing some external measurement, and we can't truly say reliably, like, oh, you have a true discrepancy in the length of your actual structures in your legs.
Yeah. So I think it was, some people call it functional leg length discrepancy, because you're not actually looking at it on the radiograph, or apparent.
Apparent. Yeah, that's the other word I was thinking of, an apparent leg length discrepancy. Because if we start talking into some of these tests, one common one that some people may have done, or this is one that I really, you know, kind of we went through in schooling and stuff, was you have someone lay down and you pull both of the ankles and make sure that, okay, you've got them pulled out, set your thumbs on a certain point on their legs. It's the medial malleolus, or that little bump on the inside of your ankle. And then you have them sit up. And what people say is, oh, if that shifts, or if one leg or that thumb shifts more than the other, that there's a leg length discrepancy.
Yeah.
Right.
Another one that I did in our clinic a lot was just looking at, it wasn't even necessarily looking at leg length discrepancy. It was looking at more of like hip shifts and one hip being higher or rotated. And this was, again, the cause, right? So if you look at the ankles and you're putting your thumbs at the ankles, that's the cause of whatever pain you're having. I don't care if it's
this difference,
the knee, the hip, the back. Like, oh, now that I found this, this is the cause, right? And same with the hip. So a lot of people, and these might sound familiar, like think of, has your clinician done this? And it's not bad. I've definitely done it. I'm just learning that it's not always as necessary as we've been taught. So putting the thumbs, again, it's always our thumbs, or these magical little things.
Thumbs know all, huh?
And we put them right under the prominent hip bones that you feel right at the top of you. So if someone's laying on their back and you put your thumbs right at the very bottom, like kind of hook underneath those hip bones, which for some people, it's hard to find. So also not as reliable, but you put them underneath there and you say, oh, it looks like, it appears in my eyeballs that one thumb is higher than the other. And it could be the slightest little shift, but it appears that one is higher than the other. So I'm going to do a little shotgun method we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's magically, you're going to hear a crack, snap, popple. Crack, snap, and pop. And you're going to feel better, right? I fixed your problems. I fixed the cause of your SI or your back pain. And you're going to walk out and probably need to come back to me.
Another one, similar. Thumbs again, bringing out those thumbs. This guy's got two thumbs. You put them on the knobs, kind of on the back of the hip. And here's one that I always saw, and the clinician's sitting behind you, and they say, okay, now bend over. And if one of those knobs moves quicker than the other, that's saying, oh, your pelvis is stuck, or mm-hmm. you have but one side of your pelvis that's stuck and not moving, or hypermobile, or not mobile enough, depending on what we find during that test. And again, we go to some little shotgun or manual technique to fix that.
Yes. And all of these are reliant on someone having to find some cause of why this is happening based on structure of your bony prominences within your body, and saying, I am then going to fix how these bony prominences are happening or are aligned within the body. And based on my technique of either cracking or adjusting or manipulating or using
facilitating or whatever it is,
muscle energy technique, PNF, some of these fancy things, based on my touch and my manipulation, I am going to fix you and you're going to feel better, which is a great trick for your mind.
Yeah, because anytime that we do these little techniques, again, we're influencing the nervous system, mm-hmm. right? And so inherently, there's a lot of issues with these techniques that we're bringing up. One, it relies a lot on a human, mm-hmm. right? And if we're looking for something, if we know that there's a symptom and we're looking for something as a clinician, we want something to point our finger at so we can tell our client or our patient on the way out, oh, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
That gives people a lot of comfort. So I think that there's some clinicians that go looking for something rather than seeing what the body gives us or shows us. Mm-hmm. So that human error, like Jen was talking about finding certain structures and really being true to the test is really difficult. Again, it doesn't take account for the fact that we're kind of sitting still during a lot of these tests. We're in a static position. And so is that leg length discrepancy or that shift or whatever they're finding always there when they see us moving dynamically, when we're doing a lot more functional type testing? So we're ignoring a whole side of this person that they aren't just laying on their back the whole time. Like, how do things look functionally?
Yep.
And then the last one I would say is, it doesn't, again, we can't see inside. That's why a lot of the things that we'll talk about are actual images to maybe see if there's a true leg length discrepancy. But it doesn't take into account that we're crossing a lot of joints, and in the pelvis, there's tons of things going on. And as a clinician feeling two little points, that doesn't reliably give us the ability to say, oh yeah, this little shift is the result of why you're feeling this way.
Right. And there are studies that prove that we can't use structure to determine, or posture to determine, that that is the cause of pain. We can look at it and say, why does your body naturally kind of hang out here? But we don't say that, especially laying on your back or laying on your stomach. Like, that isn't how you're functionally moving through life, and probably not the instances when you're having the most pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if we use a tape measure and we go from the hip bone all the way down to the ankle bone, or the belly button all the way down to the ankle bone, we're still then moving over tissues. And even that can be an unreliable test to be able to say, you know, I mean, it's still just based on human error. So the best thing that we can do to actually make it more reliable is actually get a radiograph, which now we're exposing you, one, to paying more money to get a test that might not even be the reason why you're having pain. Two, we're now relying on exposing you to radiation, possibly again, for unnecessary purpose.
They're expensive.
They're expensive.
It's a lot more expensive to get images.
It's static, exactly like he said.
Totally. And even within images, there's just so much going on in the body, and an image just gives us a snapshot. So an image, again, is a static thing and we're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, like, there's the optimal image to take to figure out if there's a true leg length discrepancy. But again, right after that, and the study that Jen was looking at, it said something like, but this does not take into account how they look dynamically,
yeah,
and how they're moving dynamically, and if that leg length discrepancy affects that movement.
And so, we'd still need to come up with a better test in order to really be able to define if this can actually be a cause. So we cannot determine cause by looking at an image. I think we've said that enough.
Yeah. And kind of like you said, what, 90% of people had some sort of leg length discrepancy? So I don't think all 90% of those people were having severe symptoms that we could blame on that leg length discrepancy going in.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of asymptomatic people that are walking around with slight differences in their leg length.
I mean, I guarantee if Dom were to measure me on the table, whether looking at my pelvis or looking at my ankles, there's going to be some difference. 100%, I can almost guarantee, because I know where my compensations are. I know that I have scoliosis. So I know that's going to make my hips a little bit more off, right? But I don't walk around with pain every day. And why? And I think that's what we really want to get into. So these techniques that we use to help to manipulate the way that we feel and actually cause a pop or a crack or, you know, that sensation to our brain that tells us, oh, that pain relief, that's gone suddenly in that joint area. Why might that be happening? And what are we really doing, you know, with those muscles?
So again, anytime we do manual stuff, anytime we do joint mobilizations or work on tissue or fascia, we just had an amazing fascia episode on the podcast. We're just talking to the nervous system and we're maybe getting those tissues to give a little bit or give some space where we normally may be a little balled up. But again, as soon as we leave that, you know, appointment or that gym or whatever, whoever's working on us, our body's going to, you know, revert back to where it's comfortable and revert back to its patterns if we haven't been taught anything else from that session or if they haven't gone any further into what can I do? Okay, I have this thing going on and you did that thing to make it go away. What can I do now to prevent this from rehashing and re-going back to that place where I had the shift?
Right. And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll do different kind of activating around the pelvis. So we'll get the hamstrings or the quads and the hip flexors to kind of activate. And then we'll get the inner thighs to activate. And then all of a sudden, like a super common one, putting your legs at the edge of the bed that people can do at home, and then grabbing your thumbs and just kind of squeezing into your thumbs. So then your fists are together. And then you just take your knees and you squeeze as hard as you can. So you just get, oh, you got a crack.
Get that? See, I just fixed my leg length discrepancy. Crazy.
So then you get a little adjustment into that pelvis area and it can change. But then we look at those two hip bones and say, oh, see, there is a change. Yep. And you can do that on your own. But what are we doing? We're actually just talking to and activating those muscles around the pelvis. So now, instead of just doing these little techniques and creating change, a better way to start to create lasting change and actually start to truly feel something different long term rather than short term would be to activate all those muscles on a more regular basis.
And we just showed you, well, we called that when we learned it, the shotgun technique for the pelvis, which is kind of a concerning name. I don't know where they came up with that. But and the other parts of that I love to do on people because it helps people feel better a lot of the times, is do that first one where we squeezed in, then have you kind of hug the outsides of their legs and have them push out against you.
So you got the glutes.
So again, you're getting those outside glutes and those rotators activating and living a little bit. You know, maybe they've been the ones that haven't been pulling their weight. And then we do a thing where we pull one of their knees up to their chest and have the other one laying off the edge. So they're really flexed in one hip and really extended in one hip and kind of push against us. And so again, you're kind of activating flexors on one side, extensors on the other side.
Hip
and then
flexors, glutes, hamstrings.
You know, totally. So then you switch sides and do it on the other side. And there in 5 minutes, you know, we've activated all of the muscles around the hip. And so if somebody doesn't feel like something has changed after that, like I'd be concerned because we just did a lot to the hip. So again, that is really going to make a lot of people feel something different in an instant, in a shotgun.
Exactly. So the point being is that if you actually want to start to feel something different within your pelvis, especially, we have to start addressing those muscles around the pelvis. Relying on a shotgun type technique, a crack, a manipulation, a rubbing, just to fix you every single time is probably not going to be a long lasting support for your body. And your body is so resilient. Your pelvis, this mm-hmm. access point within what we have. Think about all the muscles that we have connecting into the pelvis. We have our quads, our hip flexors. We have our inner thighs, our adductors. We have our glutes and all the rotators, which also play a role into the pelvic floor. And then the hamstrings and the back. And then mm-hmm. we have the core and that fascia that comes all the way down and attaches into our pelvis and our QLs and our the quadratus lumborum and all the back muscles and your fascia in the back and all of these different areas.
Is anyone overwhelmed yet?
But if we then start to talk to them and utilize them.
Yeah. It's like Jen just said, it's the access point of our body. And in order to have that happen, we need muscles attaching and tissues attaching everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it is just a whole conglomerate when you look in there of all these tissues crossing and attaching and really just educating them on how to work together, not just statically, but yes. dynamically
yeah.
is really what we need to focus on. And so what are some of the things we looked into that, you know, we think, and based on some of the research we looked into that can actually help us assess this well? Yeah, maybe doing one of those first techniques that we said. But like, again, that's not going to give you a lot of dynamic or comprehensive information on people. But once we start to actually assess their movement,
mm-hmm.
or once we actually start to look at those things, not just by looking at them, but by putting markers on them, is when we're going to really be able to tell how those segments are moving dynamically and measure it. But that's something that, again, is going to take a lot of time, a lot of money, and isn't really possible for everybody to go in and have that type of assessment.
Exactly. That's like so rare if you're going to go to a physical therapy clinic and actually be able to get yeah. those markers actually put on your body and take, again, the time, the money that it would take to really look at that. So again, if you want to just, you have to start exploring the body. You have to start doing things differently. You can't just mm-hmm. do squats and lunges and things in one plane of motion, but we actually have to do single leg stuff. We mm-hmm. actually have to shift from one side to the other. We actually have to rotate around legs. And if you're not familiar with some of these, this is why we've created the optimal body. Because yeah. these functional HIIT workouts are not just to get you sweaty, are not just to get you moving, but to actually feel something different within the body. We do internal rotation lunges, external rotation lunges, adductor lunges. We do single leg supported stuff. We do so much in order to actually feel something different around your support of your body. And also, I think a large thing that people forget about because we only look at the pelvis is the base of support of what we're actually standing on.
Yeah, our feet. And, you know, Jen's going through a lot of amazing things that we should all be doing anyway. And when we start to tease out these things, we might start to notice like, oh my gosh, I always do this way. You know, or I always... Even if you're like going up the stairs, what foot do you lead up the stairs with? Or what, you know, foot do you tend to sit or stand towards if you're waiting in line? Next time you're waiting in line somewhere, see if you're kind of shifting to one side. And the next time check and, oh, do I always shift into my left? And it's these little things that we're doing through 16 hours or plus of the waking day that are going to influence our system so much more. And that's why when we do those little techniques with a PT or a chiro or whoever who might not give us anything else, we will probably revert back mm-hmm. because we're not changing any of those underlying patterns that have caused our system and our nervous system as a whole to shift into this place. That doesn't mean that we can't start training ourselves and being more aware and training ourselves out of those patterns.
Exactly. So yes, it's not as simple, right? We don't have a one size fits all. What I hope that you get out of this is that you don't have to rely on this test to fix everything. And if you actually were truly concerned, I would go and actually then get an actual radiograph, you know, of it. If you actually thought, you know, it might be fixed with having a lift or support into your shoe.
Yeah.
But I also want to just say that I've had a client where severe arthritis in the hips, particularly one over the other, like so bad that she couldn't even stand up straight. And she was highly relying on one side to really support her. So she, you go measure any type of measurement you do, there's going to be a leg length discrepancy there, right? Because she had severe arthritis. So she's leaning away from it. She's not utilizing it as much. She's not standing up, all of those things. We got her doing and listening to the her nervous system and utilizing muscles and in a little bit of a different way. All of a sudden she was standing up straight. She was walking without pain. She was getting out of her car without pain. And she already knew, like, I'm going to go get surgery because this isn't a magical fix. She knew that I'm going to use these techniques as I transition from into surgery to out of surgery.
Yeah.
And I mean, ideal client right there, right? Not wanting to rely on me, wanting to see how she can fix patterns before even needing the surgery to fix her. And then getting out and knowing that she still gets to do something different after surgery. Incredible. And those are, again, those activations that we have in the optimal body.
And again, even if you are somebody who thinks you might benefit from something like a heel lift, generally, a good practitioner will still educate you in all these other places. If the fix is doing those techniques and then throwing a lift in your heel, again, I'd have caution because we talk about external things and internal things. And if all they're giving you is this external cue, I do this, I put the lift in your heel, and that fixes it, and you're good to go. You know, what internally are we doing to show our body and to prove to ourselves that we have some control over this? We can, you know, control those symptoms and maybe manage them and shift the system back. So again, be paying attention between external things and internal things. Thanks for listening again to another PT Pearl from the Optimal Body podcast, all about your hip shifts and leg length discrepancies. We hope that you walk away from this and actually try something and actually realize something about your body when you're standing out somewhere, when you're walking, when you're even just sitting watching TV. So pay a little more attention to yourself, and I promise you, you will start to notice the benefits down the road.
Okay. Ultimately, hopefully what you've heard by now is that you really need to continue to explore your body, to work all the angles of your body, not just in mobility, but also in strength and activations and in getting to know your own body. And that's why we have the Optimal Body membership, which I really am so incredibly proud of, because we go through therapy type exercises, HIIT workouts that you can do anywhere and you really don't need any equipment or very little, core workouts, like what the heck the core actually is, building from your foundation, mobility flows for every part of the body, mindset tools, recipes. Like, we have put everything in here, plus a calendar so you can follow it, and only for $27 a month, which, as two doctors of physical therapy who are offering you this, it's kind of a no-brainer. And I really hope that you take the time to dive in, to learn with us, whether you stay for a year, whether you stay for a few months, come in, learn the things, feel your body, and get rid of this idea of having to look perfectly, one hip higher than the other, whatever it may be. Just find the balance by moving into everything and getting to know your body. So I'm excited for you. If you come in, join the Facebook group and join our awesome community. We usually work out together once a week, and it is so much fun. So I can't wait for you to get started. The link is in the show notes, or just go to docgenfit.com/theoptimalbody. Thanks, guys. Thank you again for joining us on yet another PT Pearl. We just appreciate you so much. And of course, if you need more visuals for each PT Pearl, they are over at DocGenFit on YouTube. There is a whole section for the PT Pearls from the Optimal Body podcast that you can use to really see what we're talking about. And don't forget, if you really like this, if you're learning from it, share it out, share it with your community. Tell us what you're learning. Rate and subscribe to the episode, because there's going to be so many more goodies and PT pearls along the way. And if you're ready to dive in even deeper, don't forget, we have an Optimal Body membership with an incredible community of movers learning with us and moving in their body. Until next time, thank you again.